Well, you may or may not have heard of Hyperloop technology. It is a super fast type of transportation that will possibly move people through vacuum tubes at speeds of up to 750 miles per hour. What does that mean for the energy and the environmental footprint, though? And here to explain more is Meredith Rutland Bauer. She's a freelance reporter specializing in technology and the environment. She has a recent article in ENSEA, the Environmental Science Journal, through the University of Minnesota. And she joins us now live on the Roadhouse from the West Coast. Thank you, Meredith Bauer.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for your time, Meredith, as this is a very big topic. And, you know, we've been seeing this in the headlines on the skim, and the Hyperloop is coming, no doubt. But let's back up a second and find out a little more about yourself, Meredith, and your interest in the Hyperloop.
Yeah, well, I'm out here in foggy San Francisco, and pretty much this is the hub of all things technology and all these new emerging types of technologies. And every now and then I'll hear of a new type of technology that, you know, raises my eyebrows, and I say, you know, is this something that can really change things, or is this going to be a dud? And the more I hear about Hyperloop, even early on, I was just hooked about the potential to change the way that we get around from city to city and suburb to cities, the idea that mobility can be expanded beyond this idea of highways and airplanes, and possibly could be done in an environmentally friendly way. And so I've been following it for about the last 2 years for sure. I've been doing I started my own freelancing business, Forefront Freelance, in order to focus just on doing technology and environmental reporting here in the Bay Area. And that's one of the topics among many that I've been covering.
That's right. I like your Twitter handle, where you can be found on the bleeding edge asking too many questions. So well done, Meredith. Yes. We need folks like you out there, and your interest in the Hyperloop is valuable. You say you've been following it for a few years, but really, if you could give our listeners an idea of, like, the inception of this, and I'm interested in the word Hyperloop. Who came up with this? When was that the time?
That's a good question. So the inception and the name are two completely different things. I'll tackle the name first. As best as I know, Hyperloop was a name coined by Elon Musk in his 2013 white paper, when he, which is really this, a white paper is just, you know, I'm sure your readers are familiar with it, but just in case someone isn't, it's just a fancy word for kind of like a document that someone puts out about a technology or a product or a system that they think is interesting. And they say, here's how this can be done. Here's how I think it can be done. What do you think, world? And Elon Musk put this document out there saying, here's a way we can have a form of low-cost, high-speed, green technology, transportation technology. He said he wasn't going to work on it at the moment, but he thought it was an interesting idea, and he coined, more or less coined, the term Hyperloop. Now, we had already seen this technology out in the world, in terms of an idea, in the form of, it was called like vacuum technology or vacuum transportation technology, but it really hadn't gotten hardly any national or international attention until Elon Musk came out with this white paper. Well, so that really, what's that?
I think I had read the white paper. It was in response largely to this supersonic train idea, or this bullet train, and as a response to, like, hey, wait a minute, California, we can do better.
Exactly. And this bullet train idea has been a decades long fight that has involved massive amounts of money, massive amounts of infrastructure. And the Hyperloop is theoretically supposed to be a form of technology that can be built with much less interference among cities and the natural environment. So this is his way of saying, I have lots of ideas, I have too many things to work on, but I'm challenging engineers to get on this. And that really was the impetus of starting the industry, even though the idea itself was out there already. He didn't invent it, but he got the ball rolling. Several companies started as a result of that, quote unquote, general challenge. It wasn't like a competition, but it was a challenge he put out into the universe.
That's right. And so, without further ado, what is Hyperloop technology?
Yes. So Hyperloop is an in-development form of transportation technology that is sort of like a train, but also nothing like a train.
Right.
It is a capsule that is inside an evacuated tube that is a near vacuum, and the capsule will hold people. It'll be about the size of a city bus. It'll hold people and or cargo, and it will actually levitate inside that tube thanks to magnets. And then because there is virtually no air resistance, you can provide one large push at the beginning, and it should just sail along that tube for quite a while. They're aiming for 750 miles an hour, and the idea is to be able to get from one city to another that would normally take about 5 hours driving distance to get there in 30 minutes. And the best analogy I can give you for if you actually want to visualize this without providing photos is, have you ever been to a drive-in ATM or a drive-in bank, and you put your checks in the capsule and then it shoots up into the bank? Are you familiar with that?
Oh, Meredith, you can't believe it. I used that same analogy this morning on our morning bump for this
wonderful interview. Yes.
Of course.
That is not the same like methods they're using, but that is what it looks like. And
That's right.
It would go vertically, of course. That would be, or it would go horizontally, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you're just in a tube and you're being zoomed along, floating in this capsule, and it should feel just like an airplane ride, or just very smooth. You shouldn't feel any turbulence. You shouldn't feel any shaking, but you are going very, very fast.
Yes, yes. It seems like science fiction, but we've got those, space and science and all of the best minds working on this, certainly coming out of Silicon Valley, a lot of engineers here. What's the energy factor here? How's it propelled? It talks about electric propulsion.
Right. So it's important to note that there are only two functioning test tubes at this moment. So there's one in right outside of Las Vegas, run by Virgin Hyperloop One, and that is the only one that's full size. It's about a mile long, and it works. They've tested it, and there's also a half-size model outside of SpaceX facility in Hawthorne, California. Hyperloop Transportation Technologies is working on building one in France, but long story short, the way that this is supposed to run is they're going to have some form of accelerator at the very beginning. The way that they do it at the SpaceX facility they only have a half-size model for competitions, and they use basically another, like a pusher, another pod, and it's just a motorized electric run pod that pushes the other capsule until it gets up to speed, and then it backs off. But there are a bunch of different acceleration methods being discussed, but the fuel would be, it was supposed to run on electricity. The electricity, in theory, is supposed to be generated from solar power and regenerative braking and other renewable sources. And but at the very get-go, of course, they're going to have to, until they build all that infrastructure out, they're going to have to rely on power from the grid. But the idea, when you're looking long-term, is this is supposed to be a completely renewable system that feeds and that even produces energy through regenerative braking and feeds energy back into the power grid.
We're talking with Meredith Bauer on Hyperloop technology. She's got a great new article in the ENSEA journal, Hyperloop, its promises for ultra-fast transportation. But what does it mean for the environment? So that'll be the second half of this interview, Meredith. What are the impacts to the environment? What are some of the factors you found out?
Right. So one of the most important questions that really these environmental studies are going to have to look at is how what are the composite materials? What are the materials that this system needs? What are they made out of? Where do we get that from? Are they, a lot of them are metals? How are they mined sustainably? And then also, how does this impact wildlife and habitats as well as water resources? The best answers that I've gotten have been from the companies themselves. So, of course, you have to take that with a grain of salt until you have these independent environmental impact studies that will be coming out starting, I believe, this summer. The first one will come out. But what I've been told for at least the wildlife aspect is these are going to be not built on the surface level. This is going to be built at least about 30 feet in the air. So think of like, you're going to have some pylons or, you know, just like a elevated highway. So you're not going to have migration patterns disrupted. And this would also be built in areas that have already had wildlife destruction. So, you know, highways, railroads, where areas of trees have already been cleared out, that damage is done. So they want to see how they can minimize that environmental damage by not building on, you know, clear earth. So perhaps they can partner with railroad companies or partner with Department of Highway Transportation to build this like in highway medians or build this along bike trails, something where you wouldn't have to knock down trees, you wouldn't have to go into protected land. And the thing about Hyperloop is long and straight is good. So highways are perfect for their purposes and perfect for environmental protection because you don't want to have to go around a river or to go around a mountain. You want something that is already level and straight, and highways are great for that. Now, with the materials aspect, that's a big unknown. We're going to need a lot of very specific, very specialized metals in order to make all of the magnets that are used in Hyperloop. And then also, if you're going to have this run on renewable energy, you're going to need a lot of batteries in order to actually store that energy, particularly if you're relying heavily on solar. So those are big questions. You know, some of these materials that are used, even in some of the technologies that exist today, like our computers, the phones, are acquired by environmentally unsustainable techniques that use labor that is unethical. So some of these companies are starting to look at that and to question how can we do certain things. But it really is up to reporters like me and to, you know, the greater public to ask those questions, especially during environmental impact study comment period, to say, you know, how can we make this thing that this area is embracing, how can we make this as green and environmentally sustainable as possible?
And what kind of timeline are we working with, Meredith? When are we expecting this to, if it all works out, when could we see this deployed?
Right. Well, the interesting thing about Silicon Valley is it seems that every company overpromises. So I have heard estimates of, having the first built system in 2020, probably in like a Dubai or that area. I would imagine that the 2020s, somewhere in that decade, we'll see the first couple of systems built, probably something like to transport cargo from a loading area to a truck, like a loading area at a port to a truck delivery area a couple of miles away from that port. And if this all works out, I mean, it's probably decades away that until humans can actually use them. And certainly the U.S., in my reporting experience, the U.S. will not get the first system by any means. But it's something that I think we'll see more and more development around in the coming decade for sure.
Well, that's great. It's definitely on the horizon then. And I see you have a nice map of proposed routes in your report here. And I see a lot of straight lines, as you mentioned, And it's between the coasts, you know, of course, L.A. to San Francisco up to Seattle makes sense out west. The East Coast gets a little system between D.C. and Boston. Not a lot happening in the Midwest, though. It looks like we're pretty safe here in Minnesota, or going to get
not
left
a lot,
out.
Which, you know, is a little bit, not too surprising, but there's a lot of flat land that is available. But again, it's mostly, I believe, a practical thing related to funding and regulation. You're going to, if you take a look at the list that I have in my article on NCA.com, you're going to see significantly more routes in Asia and in the Middle East, and even in Southeast Asia. It's simpler to get the process rolling in certain other areas. And even though the San Francisco to Los Angeles route is super hyped, I would actually say that the St. Louis or Chicago routes are much more likely to be first in the U.S. I think that the local governments have been really pushing for that to happen, and I think that there's a lot more energy and a lot more paperwork is boring, but there are a lot more in feasibility reports happening out there, and that's what gets funders on board and gets things moving.
Oh, I can only imagine the amount of collaborating and financing. And is there prices to this? Is it safe to say this is, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars we're talking about?
Oh man, they all that is so far down the line that it's not even something that we can estimate in terms of the actual construction. But it was, I believe, 1.2 million for the feasibility study just for the route from Chicago to Cleveland. Not to mention one that's, you know, much further, involves going through much more urban areas. So those will be great questions. I don't think the estimates are even out there about how much this actually cost to build.
No, that's quite all right. We'll get to that bridge when we get there. And how about safety? You know, of course, we're moving people here. What's the safety factor?
Right. Well, that is one reason why cargo is a perfect first step after all of these studies have been done, after this has been tested. We are talking about very high speeds, and of course, I'm sure at first it won't be going 750 or 800 miles per hour, but it's one of those things with very small margins, and obviously, you know, a crash in a tube would be terrible, but I don't believe any of these companies are doing this heedlessly. I think that all the signs that I've been getting is they're taking it they're going at a good clip, but they're taking it slowly enough that there's going to be a lot of research and a lot more routes that are cargo only before we ever see the first human in one of these.
That makes sense, Meredith. The beta, the 1.0, that makes great sense. And it sounds like you've got a nice project to work on here for the next 20-some years. You should be secure in your exploration. On the bleeding edge, we've been speaking with Meredith Bauer, and her new article in NCIA is worth a look. It's at NCIA.com. It's Hyperloop, its promises for ultra-fast transportation, and its effects on the environment. And we appreciate so much your time, Meredith. Any last parting words of wisdom for our listeners?
Just, you know, sometimes technology doesn't go as fast as you would want it to, but I think something like this, the slow but steady method is really, you're really going to see some interesting things in the next couple of years, even though we might not see much progress in the next 6 months or year, like we might see around something like self-driving cars or flying cars or, you know, what have you. This could be something that in, you know, when my son eventually is my age, he's riding around in one of these. And I say that as a very future forward thing, because he's not even born yet. He's 2 and May.
Oh, that's so exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All the more reason to keep up the good fight. And thank you so much, Meredith. Check out the article at NCIA.com. We'll also have it linked through on this interview. And enjoy the balmy, foggy coasts of California.
Yeah. Thanks. Have a great day.